Hey everybody, welcome to episode 21 of CreateCast, the show about people who make good. I'm your host, Chase K. Up until now, I've been saying, you know, this is episode 2 of season whatever, but, you know, I'm moving away from the season format. I want to just put out episodes when I have them, feel good, and, you know, just keep them coming to you guys. So since we're moving away from the season format, this is, in fact, episode 21, believe it or not, which is awesome for me. A ton of other cool episodes in the pipeline, and I'm even doing a bunch of interviews right now that are awesome. I mean, lots of cool stuff on the way. Can't wait for you to hear them. Today's guest is kind of interesting, and no nepotism involved. He is an incredible writer, specifically an amazing poet, but he can write circles around me on virtually any paper, any computer, any pen, pencil, doesn't matter. He's an incredible writer. It's my brother, Michael. So a lot of fun. We got to sit down when I was in Vegas a couple weekends ago and just talk about his process, writing, his inspirations, and what he's doing now. As always, make sure you visit us at createcastpod.com to find more episodes, behind-the-scenes photos, lots of other cool information. You can drop us a line, sign up for our email newsletter, and please, it would help us out a ton. Go on iTunes, search CreateCast, leave us a review, a rating. Super helpful. It is the best way that people can find out about the show. Well, that's enough rambling from me. And without further ado, here's episode 21 with my brother Michael. Hey everybody, welcome to a very special episode of CreateCast. Today we have Michael, my brother, which is awesome because he is a far better writer than I could ever hope to be. Ever since I, you know, can remember him in high school giving his readings, I mean, up until now, just awesome poetry, awesome stuff, and just a cool guy. So thanks for coming on the show.
You're welcome. Happy to be here.
Even though we grew up together and we are brothers, I feel like creatively we've always been different, and not just because I play music and you're more poetry focused. I mean, you played music too and like did all this stuff, but like I'm really curious to sort of get into your just process of creation. So for me, every now and again I'll sort of have inspiration, but really like the point is I have to just sit myself down and force myself to write. How does the process work for you?
Well, that's the ugly truth about being an artist or anything that's creative, period. And what people imagine, this like romantic or morose character that sits around and they wait to be touched by the muse, but what they don't realize is the ugly truth of like literally dragging yourself in tears to the typewriter every morning. In terms of how that genesis occurs, though, what catalyzes it is a poet is one who notices, and the act of noticing something makes it important, and you end up fixating on that. And whether that could be, like with my recent collection, I just watched a Vice special on Aokigahara, Japan's suicide forest, and after 5 days, I was still thinking about it. And so I thought, well, I better write some poems then. And that turned into an entire manuscript that is still in process, and the project just got bigger and bigger. But it starts with that act of noticing, first and foremost.
So, I mean, as I said, like in high school, you did music too, and then, like, I mean, you still play piano, and you've, I can tell, like, you're just like a lover of art in general, whether it's, you know, film or poetry or whatever. But why poetry? What sort of made you focus in on that?
Chris Arrigo is to blame for that. I would have my school assignments, but I started writing for pleasure, and I don't even remember what started me. I just remember it was that summer before ninth grade, and I just started doing some short stories and doing some poems, and I don't think anyone specific encouraged me or there was any reason for it. Probably a girl was involved. I don't know. And I had my freshman high school English teacher, Chris Arrigo, who I'm still friends with and became my mentor and then later colleague. And I showed him my work and he said, get rid of the fiction. It's not bad, but you're much better at the poetry thing.
So when you first really started getting into writing and talking to Chris, what were some of maybe the early poets that influenced you? And I know, like, you always hate comparing like musical lyrics to poetry, but I know that like a lot of the bands that you listen to were pretty influential. So maybe talk about some of those early influences.
Oh, and for any young poet or writer, any sort of anyone teenage, the Beats, absolutely. So I think one of the first things I ever checked out of the library was Allen Ginsberg. But I remember the exact moment when I read a poem and enjoyed it for the first time. And that was actually Joshua Clover's Nevada Glassworks from his collection Madonna Anno Domini. And that was actually an in-class thing that Chris taught us. And it was like, it was a light bulb came on. And I was like, oh, this is what poetry can be. Oh, this is fantastic. As far as other influences, though, if I'm going to compare, you know, things like the Beats or Ginsberg, they're very good to get into, especially when you're young. I'm going to quote a friend. I can't remember which friend it was, but if you don't have punk rock by the time you're 18, you have no heart. If you still have punk rock by the time you're 30, you have no head. Everyone should go through their Beats phase. Everyone, and while they're, you know, trying to figure themselves out, because there's that energy that the Beats have that really resonates with being young and being a teenager. And then you get older and you realize how misogynistic they all were. And then you realize, oh, that's a bit problematic. Oh, Kerouac died in his mother's basement. Like, maybe this isn't as romantic as it sounds.
Yeah. I know it's, we're sort of like talking about early creativity and like the formative years. And I know it's really difficult for me to go back and listen to songs that I wrote when I was younger. Is it the same for you, reading old poems?
Oh, absolutely. Murder me. I'd rather chew glass.
Even the penis poem?
Yes, even the penis poem. The tyrant. Even the tyrant. And part of that is the nature of the journey you take from writing the poem, editing the poem, sending it out with submissions, actually having it get published, like even sending a submission out to a magazine. And then, and for anyone who's young and considering doing this, like, average response time is about 9 months. And a good success ratio, like, you are happy about this, is 1 out of 30 yeses.
And that's,
like,
yeah, that's 1 out of 30.
But that's one of the most valuable things this taught me, is to be okay with rejection. That's what sort of makes and breaks people. Like, if they can handle those 29 no's and keep at it, just keep doing that daily work that we mentioned earlier.
Man, it's so crazy to think that, and I know that this sounds sort of disheartening to a lot of people, but like, it almost seems like one of the major parts about just creativity or being successful creatively is just sort of like persistence, like this just sort of undying just need to keep doing it regardless of the success that you're having. I mean, I know it happens in music where it's like, I mean, again, or acting. I mean, you hear the same thing about people going to auditions and just getting no after no after no until they get that, that one success. It's tough.
Well, what I find is, especially with writing, especially with poetry, because poetry, on the one, you're not going to make a living doing it, which is simultaneously a hindrance, but it's also the most liberating thing in the world, because, you know, you start out only doing it for yourself. But I think where the seed of that persistence comes in for the people that do stick with it is, all writing, but especially poetry, is by its nature egotistical and narcissistic. Not only am I assuming that I have words that you actually want to hear, I'm putting them into a format that, let's face it, most people don't like. And quick comment on that, it's not that I think people dislike poetry. What I found is that people haven't found the poet that they like. There's someone for everyone.
Yeah, it's really difficult. I mean, I feel like there's with music, like, there's either the radio or there's television. Like, there are these really accessible ways for people to get into music. But it's tough because there isn't that with poetry right now. And I don't know. I mean, again, it's like, I feel,
well, I mean, there is. Every local library has a lit bag section. True. But people don't know it's there.
Yeah, yeah. Or there's Jill Silverstein, which doesn't really count.
Or your English teacher is cramming John Donne down your throat. Yeah. Not that there's anything wrong with John Donne, but when you're 14 years old and you're looking at heroic rhyming couplets, you're gonna want to put a gun in your mouth.
Yeah, it's rough, man. I know, like, when I go back and look at old songs that I've written, it's almost like a different person. Like, the person who wrote that specific song it's not me. You know what I mean? Does that make sense at all?
Oh, absolutely. Well, not a different person, but you can actually chart the progression. And, excuse me, for me right now, like, I published my chapbook through Elik Press back in 2004, and I'm working on another manuscript right now. And this is another side of the creative process that I don't think people realize. Like, I have been publishing in magazines throughout that entire process, but there are two books already written that have not seen the light of day. I'm technically on my fourth book, if you want to count the chapbook, but those first two books, they needed to happen. They needed to come because there was stuff that needed to get purged, aspects of technique and craft that consciously or unconsciously I needed to work on. But also, one of the most important questions one of my mentors asked me is like, well, what do you want to do with your writing and what do you want to say? And that allowed me to kind of look at each of those books as a stepping stone, where my master's thesis from UNLV, they're all quality poems in and of themselves, but they're just kind of pretty and they sit there. There's nothing really striking about it. They're not doing or really saying anything. Photopoeia, almost. Mm-hmm. And then we have the second book, which I wrote about Salt Lake City and my hometown, and I realized I had a lot to say, and while the content is there, the poems aren't doing anything. They are basically inert. They were inert throughout the creative process. It's me, look at that. And that was a very valuable learning experience. But the newest one is active. And I listened to your podcast with David St. John, and he gave that wonderful analogy of the mobile, where it doesn't only need to be hanging, it needs to be in motion. Mm-hmm. And I very much believe in like that physics of poetry, and not just in the act of creation or what it's about, but like they need to be doing something, they need to be moving towards something. Without that physics attached to it, then they just kind of, they sit there.
Is that something that you can know in creation, or is it something that you have to maybe finish the poem and then recognize after? Because, I mean, sometimes I'll write a song and be like, man, this is really good. And then I'll listen to it the next day and be like, man, this is a pile of shit, you know? Sometimes I just can't know.
And that's where the daily work comes in. You just keep cranking it out until you get those hits. And one of the things I'm learning now is figuring out, okay, which of my pieces are hitting that perfect balance between rhetoric and image? Where are those points marrying well? And which poems are a little weaker because one is being dominated over the other. One of the pieces that I brought today that's I'd like to read at the end, that's forthcoming in the Colorado Review's spring issue. This is one of those pieces that has that balance between rhetoric and image. And so I look at that and I think, okay, what is this one doing differently that the other ones aren't? Why is... Not that the other ones are bad, but they're 90% there. Hmm. And what do I do to get them there?
Hmm. I'm curious a little bit about just, like, the nitty-gritty of the process. And is there maybe, like, a general, maybe, amount of time that it takes you to, like, start from idea to finish poem? Or does it vary from poem to poem? Or is it, like, if I haven't finished it after this long, it's probably never going to get finished?
I very much believe in the experiential nature of things. There's different schools of approach to this, but as Don Revelle is fond of saying, I'm only a poet when I'm writing a poem. Hmm. I apologize for the bad impression. like with the current manuscript, it started out as a series of persona poems from the voices of the forest itself and the voices of the suicides and new and old ghosts talking to each other and the park rangers whose job it is to take bodies out of the forest. And if I had fixated on that, and every time I sat down to write, I fixated on that and said, this is what I'm trying to do. I have a little sandbox I'm going to work in, and I need to build the sandcastle exactly this way. Yeah. That's what makes a poem inert. That's what stops that motion, because then you're not... It's not. It stops becoming an organic process and is more akin to unearthing a corpse or an antique. You're digging something up. And so I allowed myself to write different poems. And then I noticed that, yeah, these were personal pieces, but they were thematically dovetailing with what had come before. So now the project, it's not that these new poems didn't fit what I started out doing, but they evolved and grew. And especially if you're working with themes within a collection, which is very difficult, you basically need to give it room to grow and breathe, or else, yeah, you trap yourself in that tiny little sandbox, forcing the work to come out.
You know, one of the things I've experienced is just, like, I'll start something and then I'll maybe be in the shower and I'll sort of subconsciously be continuing to write it in my head. I mean, do you come to the paper with maybe something formed, like a line that you want to start with, or is it really, do you need pen in hand or keyboard in hand, whatever, to like and actively writing it?
Well, I mean, thank God for our little light up finger boxes.
Yeah.
Magic light up finger boxes with that notes application that we can all use. I always have a notepad, basically. But no, it starts with that noticing, and noticing becomes fixation. it may be a line here and there, or like I had a line kicking around that I started back in October when I visited home, and I finally wrote the poem around that line, I think about a week ago. But I'd look at it occasionally. I'd be like, okay, are you going to come out and play now? Are you gonna? No.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you go back in the cupboard with you. in terms of like the nitty gritty process of it, I tend to handwrite things first. I'm tactile that way with it, and I will make hand notations on the handwritten copy. Then I'll transcribe them to a laptop. Additional notations will occur organically throughout that process as the geography of how the poem is going to look on the page, on the screen appears. New things occur to me. And then I print, and then I pace and read it out loud and make more hand notations and retranscribe. And everyone's process is different. Some people do this internally. That's typically my editing process because I also need to hear it. I need...
Yeah.
That ear is so important.
I think that's like a perfect jumping off point to hearing some of your poems. So okay. I know you brought a couple, so go for it, man.
So we've got, the first one is, that I'll read is My Silence and Sapling Time. And this is the one that is forthcoming in the Colorado Review. And it is, one of the persona poems from the perspective of the forest, the suicide forest itself. And the second one is a very, very recent one. In fact, you can't see it because we're on radio, but there's even hand notations on this one. Yeah. I'm still in the process, but I wanted to read it anyway. And that one's called Three Moments. My silence and sapling time. Do my trees talk to one another? At times. We don't speak to the little souls who come in. Our bark smells the city on their clothes, dry hacks from machines dusting hair. They love the iron nails that pin the dolls' notes, reminds them of their sapling hours, a time between above and below, then the hard shoot spearing dirt. Three moments. One. A blue sea, shaped like a bird, is a natural phenomenon occurring in blue eyes. Subject to emotion, the pupil contracts suddenly. More ocean bird. Two. Branches sliver in more than finger splints. The bits of light visible between blinds show shafts shaking mid-morning after winter set in. Three. I hear the cat even when I can't see it. the way I feel gravity unconsciously, or your physics as you shuffle your bones against me in bed. I dare you drop a plum. It rings like a bell tongue on the tile.
Man, those are awesome. And I wish I could write like that. So, man, I'm really glad we got to sit down and do this. So thanks for coming on the show.
Absolutely. I've been looking forward to it for a long time.
This is really cool. Thanks again.
All right.
Once again, a huge thanks to Michael for coming on the show. It's been a long time coming to get him on, and it was a fun interview. And, you know, I knew some of this stuff, but I heard stuff that I hadn't ever heard before, which is really, really cool. And, you know, we're both creative people, but we make very different things and create in really different ways, so it's always interesting to sit down. As always, make sure you visit us at createcastpod.com or search for us in the iTunes store where you can subscribe, leave us a review or rating, help us out. It's awesome, awesome if you do. So, thanks again for listening, and we'll be back next week with another brand new episode.